What's happening, guys? Welcome back to the show. I have a special guest, but first, a story. 8 years ago, around about 8 years ago, I was teaching night vision. And you're supposed to have prerequisites to be able to enter into this course. You got to prove that you're a shooter. Typically, that means everyone sends in a certificate that shows, hey, I have prior training. Until one day, I got a completely rando email from somebody who wanted to join the class. And whereas they had no certifications to prove their prior training, they sent me videos of themselves shooting. 8 years ago, before the real big boon of the gun industry, or at least how I knew it, this was a weird thing. And so I'm watching this skinny kid just shredding on the range. And it wasn't what I was looking for. I wanted to just say, no, you can't. Give me your certificates, but the kid could shoot. And I'm like, let this guy in. That kid was Lucas Bakken. Lucas, thanks so much for coming and hanging out with us.
Absolutely.
Today.
Thanks for having me.
I feel like we should shake hands. Do you think we should do that?
Nah, I think we're beyond shaking hands. Yeah. It'd be a hug, but we can't do that. We have to sit here in our chairs. So can't do
all
that.
All right. Well, screw you. I don't want to shake your hand either.
Well, I'm glad you let me into the class. I should say that.
And he crushed it. And he came back and he did a room clearing class with me as well. Uh-huh. One-man room clearing class. And we had a lot of fun. And as we were hanging out, you were the one, you know, blowing up on Instagram. I found out there was a thing called Instagram.
There was, yes.
And you encouraged me to get on there. You helped me kind of set up my stuff and you gave me some plugs and I got on Instagram and it was your influence that led me there.
Yeah, it was fun. I remember one of the first conversations I had with you, it was the second time I came down because first time we were still like, you're doing our thing. And then I showed you how Instagram worked. I remember we were in your little office and I said, you have to post pictures of Kit. And you said, I don't want to do that. And I said, I don't care. You have to do it. You have to post pictures of Kit. You have to do, and then I told you the strategy. I said, do the education that people won't watch as much, do a Kit photo that gets people interested, and then do education, and then do Kit. And you just were adamant that you didn't want to post Kit. And now I come to your studio and you have Kit.
I have Kit, but I still don't like it. Go look at my profiles. I'm still not
it's good.
Following
it's
good. Your better advice, but I just kind of fell back to I don't want to do that.
Your old ways. No, but it was good. It was a fun conversation. I'll never forget it. Just in your little office and just talking about how Instagram works. And you did not seem to like it too much.
Well, I liked YouTube.
You did like YouTube.
But, you know, you prevailed on me to get Instagram. I later got you on YouTube. And so I felt like we gave an attaboy. Can we handshake over that? Or are you still going to?
Fine. We could do that.
That's awesome. Well, cool. Well, we're going to do an interview. I have some warm-up questions, then some main questions that are a little bit more professional life, company life, and then some more personal stuff.
Good. So, yes.
You ready to jump in?
Oh, I'm absolutely always.
All right. Fantastic.
Always
All right,
ready.
Warm-up questions. Red Dot or LPVO?
Neither. No, just kidding.
Which one?
For what?
You're going to say Iron Sights just to be contrarian and obnoxious.
I'm not going to say it depends, and I'm not going to say Met TC.
You have to. All right. I've interviewed
the
some
average
people.
Person. The average person.
You have to choose between these. It's an AB.
Red Dot.
Thank you. That was not so
all
hard.
Right. Okay. I see what this is.
An awesome book you've read in the last year.
The Advantage by Pat Lencioni. Everyone should read it.
Okay. I haven't done that.
Yes.
Most overrated movie.
Oh, shoot. I don't watch movies.
You have seen movies. And what's something overrated?
The Notebook.
The Notebook.
I haven't seen it.
Okay. We haven't seen it.
I just know it's overrated. I just know.
Listen, if you are a bird, I am a bird.
I don't even know what that means.
You need to watch The Notebook.
I don't even know.
This is such a weird interview already. I'm sorry.
It's
this
great.
This is the best that
people,
we can do.
People will like it.
All right. If you could live in any time period other than our own. I love this question.
Oh, man. But it has to be in the past. Can't be in the future, obviously.
Correct.
I mean,
don't overthink.
I would want to see the resurrection.
Okay,
first I would want to see that.
That's cool. But if you believe in, if you follow, you're going to get skinned alive within the century.
That's fine.
I agree.
Because then I know. Because then
a great
I. Because then
just,
I know I'm
just
not
like,
wrong.
Count the cost, bro.
Nah, that's fine. That's fine. I'm going to die someday anyway.
Yeah, I think I'll join you in the first century. Yeah, yeah. All right. Very good. What is beyond irritating to you? What is super obnoxious? I'm going to know so I can do that thing. Could be online,
Man.
It could be in real life.
Lazy people.
Just lazy people.
Yeah.
Categorically.
Gen Zers, yeah.
I meant like
smacking your gum. Oh, but you like took a whole category of humans.
Whistling. I don't like whistling.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. Bright lights, overheads. Don't like those either.
Chicken, steak, or seafood?
Steak.
Damn. One person from the gun industry you would choose to survive the zombie apocalypse with?
I'm going to refrain.
You have to choose.
It's Fifth Amendment. You have I didn't to sign anything to be here.
Doesn't matter. You're here. It's just the rule.
You know,
it's the warm-up question. Okay. I can't save you from these. Okay, I don't so have my the
goal,
authority.
Okay, so my goal would not necessarily be to survive. Well, it's survive or be a warlord. It could be you because it would be fun.
I think we'd have a lot of
fun. It would be fun.
Yeah.
I don't think you would let me be a warlord, though. There'd be too many moral consequences and questions. And you would
yes, hold you can't me at murder bay. Innocent people.
There will still, I wouldn't want to do
there'll
that.
There'll be some basic rules of humanity.
Yeah, there'd be some ROE. I mean, I would say my wife, but I think gun industry. You said gun industry. Yeah, it'd be most fun probably with you.
Thank you. Probably. I appreciate that. I would totally stack cold bodies with you.
Thank you.
All right.
That means a lot.
Hero from history.
The one I can think of right now is Charlemagne, but...
Charlemagne?
Yeah.
You really are all about that conquest, aren't you?
He pushed some people out of Europe that needed to be pushed out.
Very good. Best investment in our 2024 dystopian economy?
Best investment, get better at your job so you make more money.
Okay, fantastic. You have made it through the warm-up questions. Congratulations.
Oh, that's great. I fought it, but yeah.
Yes, you did.
I resisted.
All right, very good. Main questions. In a recent post, I didn't know this, Ben drew this to my attention. In a recent post, you mentioned you've drawn your CCW twice in your life. Last week at your barber shop.
It was a half pull, but yeah.
It's a half pull.
Half pull,
great. And then once in Atlanta. Can you tell us what happened with that?
Sure. So the barbershop one's fun. I've always thought this one, because when you're in the barbershop, you're the most exposed and vulnerable, supposedly, right? Because the dude's working
I'm
on you.
I'm under the thing, and I just have my gun out like this. Yeah. So when you swivel, there's a little...
So I'm literally in the barbershop, and this is a nice upscale salon. Not a barbershop. It's a salon, mind you. And I hear the door just like blast open, and a guy come in like demanding where... such and such is or something. Mm-hmm. So I literally just hand on the gun, like ready to go.
Yeah.
Swivel, bib on.
So like, did you break initial retention?
That's why I say half now. Some, maybe a little.
Okay.
Just kind of still in there, but ready to go. The Atlanta one was more interesting. This was like 7 years ago. I was driving with a friend to a bus stop on the south side. Mm-hmm. The bad area, southeast side. I can't remember which side of it was. We were going to a bus stop to drop someone off because he picked the wrong one, this young Ranger kid, to go back. And it was during Thanksgiving. We were at this stoplight. We dropped him off. We're at this stoplight. We're boxed in. We can't go anywhere. And this homeless dude just starts walking full speed, lumbering along, full speed straight at the car, and just sticks his face right up against the glass, just staring at the driver. And I'm the passenger. Mm. And I can't see his hands, don't know what's up. We're boxed in. And I was like, you know what? I can take my gun out, and I'm going to be ready. And the driver, my buddy, just kind of slumped back in the seat. So I had room, and I just had the gun out. I oriented, and I was like, all right, if he presents a weapon or he does anything, I'm just going to shoot. Because we can't go anywhere.
You're out, but muzzle down.
I'm out, muzzle down. I'm just holding it right here. I oriented my body as much as I could. My buddy slumped back. We sat for, it felt like a minute. It was probably like 5 seconds. Light turned green. And then we just drove off, and he just stood there looking at us drive off. Hmm. It was the weirdest thing ever. It wasn't that risky, but it's not like we could fight and we couldn't go anywhere. So it's either, you know, what you're going to do.
I am very well aware of things that could go bad and end up being nothing burgers. Most of war is a dry hole where you get all spooled up.
And then you get there and you're like, oh, there's nothing. 2,000
enemy packs, and then you get all hud up, and then you're supposed to just go little site survey of something, and then it's a fight. And so it's properly, you just never know, and things can go sideways real.
Thankfully, nothing happened.
Thankfully, nothing. So what's been going on at T-Rex Arms? For those of you who don't know who Lucas is the founder of T-Rex Arms. It's a family-based business. Him and his brothers have created this company that focuses on products for the firearms industry, also educational, education for firearms and Second Amendment advocacy. And so they've built a awesome company, lots of cool merch, inventions and whatnot. And I think they're a force for good in the gun industry. And Lucas is a phenomenal, phenomenal shooter. He shoots all the time and does good real world testing. And so how's things at T-Rex Arms?
T-Rex is finally a normal company, ish, kind of. We have our first sales goals ever in the history of the company, 10 years in, which is cool and hard at the same time, because I'm not a sales-driven person. So seeing sales goals and how certain decisions are made around those makes me uneasy, maybe, at sometimes seeing some, you know, decisions going in that direction sometimes. But as long as the mission is still, you know, maintained and the priorities are still there, it is perfectly fine to have sales goals.
Yeah.
So we're kind of working through that. But the biggest change that we've had lately is we have a CEO now who's not one of the owners, and he's not me, that we brought in. He's been with the company now for 7 years, a former Marine colonel, fighter pilot, and he's been in the company. He started – it's actually super cool. He started making holsters, so at the very bottom, arguably, of the company, and he's worked his way all the way up to now he's leading the entire company.
That's awesome.
The board oversees what he is doing, so the owners are on the board. I'm on the board. But he is the guy who's now steering the ship, making the decisions, making the calls, responsible for what's going on, which allows me to now go and focus on – what I'm good at, which is not being a CEO, not doing people management, not doing operations management, but, you know, sort of that big vision casting, you know, what does the industry need? What do people need? What do we need to do for our customers? You know, what's the culture of the company like? What's the culture of the content that we're putting out? What does that look like? And he can focus on the operational management. So that's been the biggest change. And it's still, he was appointed in November, I want to say. And then obviously there's the train-up period and getting all that squared away. So we're still kind of going through that right now. But that's the biggest thing that's been happening at T-Rex, which is freeing up a lot of us to do what we're good at. And he could focus on the operations side, which most of us either aren't good at or don't really want to do. So now we have a guy that can handle that. So that is huge for me, but it's also big for everyone else.
You and your brothers, you know, y'all are – is it all family-owned?
We have a guy who's not family, but he's sister married one of my brothers, so sort of family. Yeah.
Noir.
Yes. Yes. So family-ish. Yes.
So y'all have varying personalities and skills.
Indeed. Yes.
You know, I've heard the adage, hey, don't go into business with close friends or family. And how's that been with you guys? I think you were raised differently than the common bear.
That is correct.
Your mother and father helped me and my wife early in our journey to help tip us over in deciding to homeschool.
Right.
And so since then, we've converted thousands of couples to homeschool. So that's we're really big in the we're really invested in the homeschool movement. But we owe a lot of that to your parents.
That's very
cool.
And
I think you guys were raised in what I would call as a, like a holy think tank. And I was very impressed by your parents and your brothers. How's it been being in business with them?
You couldn't have asked me a more loaded question. No. So business with them has been very good. It has also been very challenging.
Sure.
I will say that if someone wants to get into business with family, it should not be an immediate no. Mm. It should not be an immediate yes, simply because you're related. There are a number of things you need to work through or figure out, hopefully ahead of time. And one of them is who's in charge, which is particularly difficult if it's, you know, I'm the founder, like I've been doing it the longest. Yeah. I'm 10 years younger than David, 12 years younger than Isaac.
Yeah.
And so when there are certain projects or things that I want to do, there is that question of, you know, can the older brothers respect what the younger brother is doing? Can the younger brother respect what the older brothers are wanting to do or one of them is wanting to do? And so a lot of that should, if possible, be de-conflicted first before going into business. If you're already in business and you haven't done that, that can be very difficult. So there's at times that occurs where there's a decision that you know I want to do, or there's a decision one of them wants to do, and we kind of get away from talking about just the objectiveness of that decision. Like, is this a good business decision? And the family stuff seeps in on, you know, old brother, big brother, you know, younger brother and all that. And that is very difficult. We actually had Pat Lencioni's consulting group come in last year. And they sort of mediated some discussions, which was really helpful as an unbiased third party hired by the company in and see how we interact with each other and go, hey, you know, you're not respecting him on this thing. You're not respecting this over here. Like, you really need to think about what's going
on
here. And
that's
I wish we could have done that like years ago.
Yeah.
But God's timing, it was much better to do it, you know, last year for sure. And that was very helpful for all of us to be able to interact with each other better. Because you're right, we're all different. We're all wired differently. We have different goals, different whatevers. Yeah. And so, and having the CEO model is helping in some of that, because he's, you know, an unrelated person can make decisions based on what we bring to him that's objective, like fact and what should happen. And then he chooses, and it's not so much of like a family decision or blood relation decision. It can be an objective business decision, because when you mix family with business, it's very easy for the family past, even something 20 years ago, that's not even related to T-Rex, can kind of seep up and come up. And then it's, wait a second, why are we talking about that? Yeah. Or why is that coming up? We're talking about this thing for our customers. Like forget that. We need to focus over here. So that can be very difficult. If you haven't been able to establish that ahead of time, which we wouldn't have been able to 10 years ago, years ago, that we didn't even know what to establish back then, to be honest. I didn't know what I needed to do or not do. And so it would have been hard to even do that back then, but, it's been good and challenging at the same time. I'm not going to say it's all champagne, caviar, and roses.
Of course.
It's not, but it's also not impossible.
Well, I'm glad y'all figured out a way to, work stuff out. Mm-hmm. And to have the wisdom of bringing in a third party to be able to hire and listen. I'm like, that's really cool. So you're not so busy working in the business that you don't work on it. Because me, just a spectator, farther away, but I've been friends with you for a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm friends with David and I'm friends with Isaac. And I recognize your brothers, older, wiser, and certainly, I think, technically geniuses.
Sure.
In their own way. And I'm like, man, all of y'all, and I mean, your gifts are obvious as well. And to be able to mash that together, that's quite a dream team. That's pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
And so anyway, glad you're playing nice.
Yeah.
It can be difficult. Relationships can be really difficult in the controversy and the strife and the disagreement, especially with strong-willed, alphas. I see things my way. You see them your way. And if you don't agree with me, well, you're stupid and you're wrong. And it's so easy for strong individuals to do that. And so, you know, you've navigated that better as a family and y'all are working through it. And that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The gun industry, I want the firearms community to really rally together as much as possible so that, you know, the rising tide rises all ships. And I think if we don't do some semblance of coalition building, the Second Amendment is going to eventually be crushed underfoot. And in that the whole Marxist plan is to divide and conquer. And if we're divided as a gun community, we are ultimately screwed.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about coalition building within the gun community for, we have all these differences and, you know, you like a such and such height mount and I like a high riser and I'm an idiot.
You
for
do
it.
High ready. I do low ready.
Blah, 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 blah. How can we actually still play along well enough to,
so
how do we do coalition building? How do we actually come together as a gun community?
So the first thing that has to happen is establishing trust, which has to happen in any organization, or I would say family as well, in order to do anything after that. And one of the things that has to be done to establish trust is people are vulnerable with each other, which is the number one thing people with egos do not do. They do not say they, you know, aren't good at a thing or don't know a thing, or they don't go to someone asking how to do that thing. And the reason coalitions have not happened historically in the firearms community is one group will say, we know this thing really well, and we know it better than everyone else. And the other group says, no, we know it really well, and you don't understand why we do it this way. And nobody's willing to be vulnerable for even a second to go, hey, I want to hear from your side and see why you think that. I may still disagree at the end, but tell me why. I'm going to pretend like I don't understand and give it to me fresh, or I don't know. I need to be educated, which is very vulnerable to say that. And as soon as that can start happening, trust can start getting built, and then you can start getting into bigger conversations like role of government or what does the Second Amendment mean?
Well,
those are much bigger conversations.
I think with, you know, close relationships, trust is critical, but when it's further away, perhaps saying trust is the key ingredient to make sure all Second Amendment people can play nice, it might be too heavy a burden. Hear me out.
Sure, it's possible,
If the standard is trust, now I need to get into your business, you need to get in mine, we need to kumbaya, and we need to come together in an agreement. And when meanwhile, I'm like, I see that guy once a year at SHOT Show.
Yeah.
I don't really know all the stuff he's saying. I saw a little glimpse, and I didn't really like that. But perhaps trust building isn't actually a realistic goal. It's not possible.
It's true,
So what if it was just respect. Respect enough to be like, you know what? He believes this strongly. He's overall a force for good in the community. I don't like a few things, and I'm just not going to tear him down. What if it was just, what if the baseline wasn't trust? It was just general polite manners and respect. You know, because...
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't that be a better vehicle for coalition building than the high standard of trust?
So, I can agree with that. There's one caveat, though. So, what you're describing sounds a lot like what's called the Reagan principle, which is highly problematic. Now, I don't have the solution for this.
I'm not making public policy. I just want
to... No, that's fine. That's
let's
fine.
Be kind of friendly toward each other. That's my standard.
Yes. And so, and I've seen this happen. When I first got in the industry, everyone was too friendly with each other, actually. There were no standards held. Anyone could say or do anything, yeah. And nobody was willing to call them out on anything. Mm-hmm. And the issue with that over the last 10 years has been poor standards being perpetuated, poor business practices, poor yeah. ethics and morals. So I like the idea of everyone being able to have mutual respect, at least for their, you know, they have a large customer base, they're doing good things, I can mutually respect them. The issue I have is in order to have that genuinely, there still has to be an element of being courageous enough to call someone out who is doing a problematic behavior that is actually hurting the entire coalition. Because what I have seen in yeah. conservative circles or Republican circles for that matter, there's the Reagan principle, which is you never speak ill of another conservative or another Republican.
I disagree with that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I disagree
and that causes
with that.
All sorts of issues. Yeah. So at the same time, how does the firearms industry operate like a coalition while still having a form of standard somehow, moral, yeah. ethical, just strategic, maybe Second Amendment yeah. related, where when someone speaks out of turn or does something that is not representative of our coalition, how do we call them out? And that's where I think in the last few years, the needle has swayed from everyone is too nice to now everyone is too critical, mm-hmm. potentially, where it's just the second something happens, it's write them off, boycott them, like Daniel Defense is a perfect example. Write them off, kill them immediately. Like, we're not going to be objective or try to question what's going on. And there's this balance in the middle, which is there's enough objective, like critical thinking going on of consumers and of like coalition leaders, you know, if you want to say that, who are able to operate with each other and have those questions and have that conversation while at the same time having mutual respect. Because for me, I'll respect anyone who's willing to have that conversation and be objective with each other and call each other out or call something out or a bad behavior. The people who just pretend like everything's good and fine and nice, I know, are they just being a shill for everyone? And that's not very helpful either.
So I don't like shilling. It's a trading of your integrity for popularity or money.
Yep.
In a man's integrity, if you lose your integrity for that, well, then you're not really a man and you're certainly not virtuous.
You won't be a valuable resource to any movement.
Absolutely. And so, of course, I don't want to just, I would never submit, don't call out anyone and let's make everyone like us.
Yeah.
That's not it. And it's not, the acceptance of everything, but it's like, how could we...
Right.
Call people out without burning a bridge at the same time.
Yep.
There's a proverb in scripture that says an offended brother is more unyielding than a fortified city. And so I recognize, and this is what I've been trying to do from the very get-go, recognize, this is my industry, but it's also my mission field. And so my desire is I can hold high standards, which I do. I hold extremely high standards, especially for myself.
Right.
I'll give other people an open-handed benefit of the doubt. When I see something below standard, I figure out how can I make a difference rather than make a point. A lot of people just want to make a point.
Yeah.
They're like, that's wrong, boom. And I just kind of burn them down. And here's my point, and here's why they're stupid. And when we do that, it pisses the other person off. It forces people to choose their favorite guy, and it causes this big riff. And perhaps the answer would be better served in is, how could I answer this person so that their pride doesn't flare up? It's like, instead you have
it's like curiosity.
Ask them leading questions or just submit of, hey, I'm not the only game in town here. They do stuff different. I don't really roll like that. I roll like this, but I recognize they're a force for good. Me and you disagree with on a good bit of stuff here and there, but overall,
I don't know.
As I'm defending you to my own students sometimes, I'm sure you defend me as well, but
not so much.
But I'll be like, no. I think Lucas is a force for good in this industry.
Sure.
And that's my overall. That's the blanket of respect I extend. I'm like, we don't agree on some stuff. And I'm like, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And the thing is, I don't have the answer for what the balance is. Like, I've seen the industry go way over here, too nice, and I've seen it go way over here, too critical. And I've been on the receiving end of both ends of the spectrum. I don't know what the middle looks like. And this is the one that really I don't fully understand. So there's Matthew 18, which is when you have an issue with a brother, you go to them in private, and then you take a third party, an unbiased third party, hopefully, potentially,
the church.
The second time. And then the third time, I think, is the church, is everyone. Yeah. So the hangup I have with that is if someone does something to me personally, like in private or in a situation, I'll go to them. Like at work, I'll do that. I'll go
and
to them one-on-one.
The context is brother, so that's Christian on Christian.
So this may not apply at all. So the point is, and I've had people mention this, when someone publicly makes a statement, like let's say Tim Kennedy or someone, they make a public statement about a thing, can a influencer, I hate saying that, an influencer in the same space make a public statement refuting or questioning or challenging that other opinion before going to the person one-on-one or with a phone call?
Yeah, it depends on how clear it is and how much, some of it's more nuanced. I'm like, you say something crazy to me online.
Sure.
I'm like, well, that's freaking crazy. But I'm like, no, hold on. And then I immediately go into selfie mode and refute and I've reached out with you on stuff in the past, text or phone calls and be like, dude, explain this so I understand a little context. And after hearing a point of view, I'm a lot less hot on something.
Yep.
And so I think some just general kind of dialogue like that would be easy.
Yeah. I don't think it's always, and a lot of viewers, and I think it's a cope situation sometimes, you never called the guy, so your opinion doesn't matter. Or you're not allowed to make a public statement about this other person's public statement. And I'm kind of like, not necessary.
I don't have to call them. I think there's a way to refute something without destroying the man, his legacy, and everything about
it. Oh, sure.
So somebody
don't
says
throw out
something
the baby with the bathwater.
And they're off. You can immediately be like, hey, I appreciate what this person has done for blah, blah, blah. Super great with this. On this issue, man, I'm going to have to disagree, blah, blah, blah.
But
this
they're
is
a
why
retard. Yes.
I'd love to hear why. Well, no, you do that and you get to be the strong man. Yeah, you're right. Your audience says, and the other audience says, boo. And everyone's got their pitchforks
come out.
Yeah,
and torches.
And so then that ends up being a wedge and a divide. Yep. And we don't end up playing nice with anyone. Matthew 18 was part of it, is if your brother is wrong, you go to them. Matthew 5 puts it on, if you have wronged your brother, then you go to them. So either way, whether you've been wronged or whether you do the wronging, go to your brother. And so the impetus in the Bible is never wait for someone else to reconcile. You bring it, you bring forgiveness, and that's the Christian world and non-Christians in general. You're just not bringing the church to confront somebody who rejects the church. And so there are some contextual shifts there, but the idea is do your best to live at peace with everyone. The scripture says so.
Hmm. Yes.
Take it up with the author.
and the thing is, I see it as a very big responsibility for anyone in our position to have. It doesn't matter whether you have 50,000 people following you or 500,000 or 5 million. If you say something bad about a person, they will get flamed to some extent. If you say something good about a company, they will do lots of business and you can build up the wrong people, which I've done plenty of. So I feel very responsible for this. But it is something I'm still trying to figure out because I do think it needs to be demonstrated well. Mm. The balanced approach by someone like you or maybe someone like me, if I have the maturity to do it, to demonstrate what that balanced, hey, we respect people in this area over here, but we're able to hold a standard and hold people to it and move the entire industry in the right direction. Now, what the balance is, I'm still looking.
I think
I've gone both sides. I know I have, but it's trying to find that middle. And you may be more there already than I am. But I'm sure you are, being older and more mature and all of that. But
I've got this beard.
I'm not growing a beard. I don't care. No,
the beard helps.
Sure. Okay. It would make me look weird.
Wisdom.
I would look bad. The beard, it's all scraggly. It'd be bad.
No, I agree with your point. I like that point. Who in the gun industry, to that end, do you like and respect?
What kind of person does it have to be? Are you saying
person in the gun industry that you have?
I should have come prepared.
For.
I didn't prepare for any of this. I'm gonna have to come back to that.
Okay, I like and respect almost every one of them. Like I like them.
Oh well, okay. Yes. I respect everyone for their. I mean, I respect people I don't even like for the work that they do and the creative things that they do. I'm trying to think of someone that I would definitely
it's
like.
It's kind of like, let's coalition build, but I don't like or respect anyone.
Well, no, it's not that, but I'm trying to pinpoint who I respect the most.
No, just a baseline of kind of like, hey, like this person, respect what they're doing.
I respect, I was actually thinking about driving up, I respect that Brandon Herrera is running for office.
Cool.
And it doesn't seem like he's running for popularity points.
Yeah.
Unlike some people who've done it. I appreciate that. Although I have not talked to him about his policies or anything like that. So I appreciate that he at least is trying to do a mainstream thing that mm-hmm. can actually maybe make some change. And he's, you know, getting flamed on Twitter for all of it and everything. And I think that's great. So, and I don't know him super well. I've talked to him like once or twice.
Everybody in the comments, especially if you're in Texas, jump in and say, go Brandon. We need some gun-loving guys, some of us, and get the politicians out and get some people with some
fresh
conviction
blood
in there, and that would be fantastic. We were talking about instruction, mm-hmm. instructors, before we went hot on this episode. What is a mark of a really good instructor? What do you look for?
The ability to say they don't know. 100%.
Yeah.
If they can't say that, I don't want to say I could care less about what knowledge they do have, but if someone doesn't have the character to be able to say they don't know a thing, they generally can't get very good at stuff in life.
They have to
have that for at some point.
I love that.
To then get truly expert, awesome, great.
I think that's great. Humility is fantastic. We have this little conversational card deck over here. Ben gave it to me because I'm trying to get better at questions and I'm not very good.
You should put it here.
But we drew one and I thought it was really interesting, but it kind of dovetailed in.
Oh, okay.
I have this as a personal question later, but because it's kind of like, it is what you were just saying is
right.
The ability to say, I don't know, and leading with that humility. So here's kind of that offered on a softball down the middle to you. What's something that you actually want advice about right now?
How to deal with family. No, let's see.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
I'll need that for till I die.
It's wide open.
Honestly, it's
not industry.
What we just talked about.
Anything.
No, what we just talked about. Finding the middle.
Yeah.
Finding the middle of when is it, I have on my Instagram, I'm not afraid to say when the emperor has no clothes,
yeah.
Which is basically what this is about. But when is that appropriate versus a different response publicly,
yeah.
Not in person, because that's different.
I think the Bible
publicly
just spells it straight. It says, and it's so quick. It says, speaking the truth in love. And I mean, I think that's it. Of don't
yeah.
compromise on values, be courageous and say the truth. But how do you do it without, you know, burning yeah. this guy
don't murder
down
babies.
Of like,
right.
Let's,
yeah.
That one right there is a little bit different.
It's a little different. It's hard to say that. Yeah.
But it is speaking the truth in love. Stop murdering babies. It's still good. I love babies and I will speak plain
exactly.
truth on it. And so everything for a Christian is speak the truth in
yes.
love. And sometimes that looks really prickly and aggressive, but it's actually still done in love.
Mm-hmm.
But I think especially for coalition building, it's don't you know, go scorched earth on this person. Don't call anyone a moron unless they're categorically truly are.
I have been convicted at times to not say like retard or things like that, but maybe just go back to the biblical fool.
Yeah.
You're being a fool
yeah.
or you are acting foolish, which is
yeah.
actually a more appropriate way to say it. But
right.
I don't know.
We were doing instructors. And so
yes.
one is you put forth humility. What else?
There's nothing else. No. Demonstration of skills. It's so the problem is there's like kind of what we were talking about earlier. There's five things. There's communication, skills, the humility part. Do they have nice hair? No, just kidding. Personality. No. There's a lot of different things. Communication and skills, depending on what the instruction is, needs to be pretty high.
Yeah.
I can learn something. Now, it depends on the person. If someone's bad at communicating, but they're really good at demonstrating,
yeah.
I can get something from that.
Yeah.
Now, not everyone can. Some people need to be told things. Like I was at the premier sniper place up in Idaho, and I was shooting, and the Brian Morgan, it's at Hat Creek. Brian Morgan is laying down the law on me at the dinner table about long range. And about 10 minutes in, I wanted to stop him and say, hey, dude, I don't take information this way. I need to go see it. Or
yeah.
I need to go do it myself while you coach me.
Right.
You just telling me and drawing stuff on paper, this is not how I receive information. So as soon as we went up to the little pole barn thing and started shooting, and I saw it in my scope, and he's telling me what's going on, then it clicked. Or if I just saw him shoot in those positions, I was like, now I see it. So the communication side, it depends on the person. I need more of the skill to observe and see more than I need communication. Other people might need more communication than demonstration of skill. And so it's tough because that is kind of a – depends on how the person's wired. Yeah. But the humility part has to come first. And then after that, depending on what I'm going for, they'd better be pretty dang good.
This is not on topic. It's more of a segue but or a rabbit trail. But you mentioned the way that you learn. I love the way your brain works.
Thank you.
And that you can literally just – you see something and take it apart.
I'm learning right now, by the way.
In this – no.
Seeing how you do this.
In this account. Mm-hmm. Shut up. I'm talking about like the accountant with Ben Affleck.
I'm not that autistic. Jeez.
No, are you on the spectrum?
I haven't been tested.
Who cares? Anyway, you're able to take something apart in this wonderful autodidactic kind of way, teach yourself something and really – zoom in. It is a bit of a superpower. It's funny I brought up the accountant because I've been thinking about you in the movie The Accountant more and more. And it's not to put you on the
scale. I could shoot better than him. Way better.
You are an incredible shooter. You've worked really hard and you've coupled hard work, scientific study and natural talent. And you've merged all of them together, make yourself an incredible shooter. So way to go. No, I think of it more of in that movie. Have you seen the movie?
I have, yes.
Okay, Ben Affleck has a brother.
I think I remember that. Yeah, I think.
He's the guy that's in The Walking Dead.
Yes, I now remember. Yeah.
When you're coming down here, I'm trying to get you to stay and hang out and come to the farm and bring your wife. And I'm like, be my friend, Lucas. I'm not – the cameras and gadgetry is great. I'd rather have it all off and let's just hang out and be buddies. But you're like all work and no play. And I feel like you're the accountant, Ben Affleck.
I've gotten better.
And I'm the brother. And we're like punching each other at the end. And I'm like, why don't you love me and want to be my friend?
Well, if we punch each other, you'll win.
I don't want you – well, I'm not gonna beat you up. Oh, in the movie, you totally have my lunch. But that's how I feel like. Come on, man, hang out with me.
We will make a trip.
Really?
At some point. Someday.
So the missus, come over and we'll just hang out.
What kind of animals do you have?
Grill up.
This will be the deal breaker. What animals do you have?
I will get whatever animal gets you to our farm.
Of raccoons.
That's awesome.
I need a bin of raccoons.
I need
a raccoon refuge.
If someone had a whole refuge of just domesticated raccoons, I would make friends with them just to see it.
My wife, I'm a huge animal person. People have no idea. My wife, for my birthday last year, took me to see capybaras because I always wanted to see them.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, it's not super humane. There's an animal preserve here in Georgia that we went to. And I didn't come to see you that time, I guess. Sorry. But the capybaras were a lot more important, to be honest. So we got to pet them and feed them carrots and stuff. It was super fun. Yeah, it was fun. And they had other animals.
So we have cows, chickens, dogs, cats, alpacas. We have 7 alpacas.
Do they spit?
They spit at each other, and you can get caught in the crossfire. But
good to know.
They're not interested spitting in you.
What else?
And we have 4 horses.
Man, not a horse guy.
They're super fun, man. We could all do like a double date through the mountains.
I'm terrified of horses. Terrified.
I'm
terrified.
Sit behind me and you just hold on real tight right there and I'll protect you.
This is where you start a different account on the internet and you sell those photos for money.
That's awful. It wouldn't be a good look for either one of us, you know. Let's agree mutual destruction is not a good idea.
Are you milking your cows?
Not yet. They're all beef cows
Because I can do that.
Okay.
I know how.
Fantastic.
I'm not the fastest, but I did it for 2 years.
If you tried to, you'd make it some battle drill. You'd come out with a YouTube video.
Have a shot timer.
You would crush it. You'd be the best milker ever.
It's mainly just dodging the tail, to be honest.
You could do it.
I know all this stuff.
You'd Ben Affleck that stuff. You're just amazing.
Made it a science.
All right, let's move on to some the instructor thing.
Yes.
Did you want to close a loop on that of like demonstrable skills for us warrior poets?
Yep.
Everyone needs to be able to shoot and prove it at a high level. If you can't demonstrate it, I don't want to hear what you have to say. We like the coach's eye. You should be able to fix someone in a moment. And so that's how I articulate. You got to be on board with our ethos. You got to have a verifiable resume that gives you some ability to speak in what you're doing.
So if you're teaching,
if you're teaching performance shooting, you should be a performance shooter of some kind. Easy demonstrable skills. If you're teaching how to kill people in gunfighting, you should have been in a gunfight before.
Probably. Reasonable.
For that. If you're teaching bull riding, you've rode a bull. You know, if you're teaching cooking, you can cook. If you're a personal trainer, you're not round in shape, you know? And so it's just that. And then, you know, master communicator. That's kind of that's five.
Probably the hardest.
It is the hardest. And I care most about master communicator. I don't know what to put
ethos
next.
Is first. Now, so ethos, I think it's ethos for you.
Yeah.
Communication.
Yeah.
Operational relevance. Well, skills.
It depends on what class the relevance. It is.
Even shooting. Like, you'd better be a good shooter.
Yeah, but if pistol one and two, a pistol one class, you don't have to be some
Army, you don't have to be
Army
a GM.
Ranger
no,
or whatever.
No, you don't have to be a GM.
No, you're just a real good shooter. Yeah,
you can just do it and not shoot the hostage over and over.
But in Pistol 3, we're doing weapon disarms. You got to have some combatives.
That's combatives. Oh, okay.
Yeah, gun disarms, and you're throwing people down, and then you're doing force-on-force up close, shooting them with UTMs. Oh. And so that's our Pistol 3. We want everyone to progress toward force-on-force.
Very cool.
Everything's force-on-force oriented. That's the show. That's the sparring. And all this shooting is just to get you ready.
That's honestly probably harder to find instructors for than the shooting.
It is. And right now, it's just me and one other guy can teach Pistol 3.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. He's looking for resumes.
I'm wildly picky and really Paul.
That's good. No,
does,
that's good.
Does the, because we fill out all our classes. We have.
Here's the thing, being picky, I will say this. For people listening who might be frustrated by that, being picky is a good thing because if you do end up coming to work here for John, you can expect to only have other cool people working with you.
We only have cool people.
Being picky is actually there's been some conversations at work actually where people I don't say they're concerned we might bring in some doofuses, but they want to make sure that hiring standards we have are the same as what they had or better, so that they're only surrounded by, I call them killers, but it's probably a better PG word I could use, but they're only surrounded by cool people, not chumps. So high hiring standards are good, and it protects the people you do have.
Yeah, and I want to hire for attitude and character over skills. Skills I can teach.
Skills are,
Compromise values. I'm like, nope, we have no place for you. I have nothing. And self starter and stuff like that. Let's go to some personal questions. You down?
Sure.
You are now. How long have you been married? Like 2 years now?
Two and a half.
2.5 years. How's that going?
It's going great. Sex.
Share. Because for us, our first few months was amazing. Just kind of like honeymoon. I'm like, man, I got my own girl here. This is awesome.
Sure.
And then it got hard. And our first 2 years was the hardest of our marriage.
Yeah, our first year was the hardest.
Yeah. Why was it hard?
I probably won't talk about that. No,
that was fine.
I can't. A lot of it was family related.
Okay.
There were some many challenges in our first year of being married, but we got through that, got stronger. I'm actually glad we had that. We were talking about it yesterday, actually. And she was like, can we please not ever have some of that stuff again? And I said, yes, we don't need to, but I would do it again with you. Mm. And she said that she would too. And then later she was like, but you're not serious, right? We're not going to do all that again, are we? And I said, no, we're not. Yeah. We're fine. But some of it was family related and just us, being our own family. And, what does that look like? And then there was, some stuff with work at that time, because this was in 2021. Mm-hmm. So it was right after the COVID craze and everything's crazy. There was lots going on at work. But we grew through that. Right now we're actually working on, I can't talk about it too much, working on another company that she'll be starting with me.
Cool.
So we're both working on that, have a new office for that, separate.
Very good.
Satellite office.
You'll tell me offline though, right?
I might.
You will.
I have people at work who don't even know. Anyway, they don't know what it is. But
I'll get it out. Okay. He'll tell me.
So
I can't tell y'all, but he'll tell me.
Yeah, because we have a lot of things we want to do, and she's already running our whole real estate thing, which is definitely its own job. So she's very busy. I'm very busy. But we've done things. We've outsourced a lot of things, so we can spend a lot of time together.
Got it.
That's great, which has been very helpful.
So remove external factors that caused initial difficulty in your first 2.5 years, and just focus internally. I think folks, newer married folks could really benefit from this. But if you could go back in like, all right, you just passed honeymoon night, and then you're like,
now
young,
what?
Young Prior Lucas, I only have 1 minute. This is what you need to do. So critique yourself. What would you tell yourself?
I would say I would have told myself, and this is where probably some of my autism comes in, but I don't want to use that as a crutch, so I try not to. Pay more attention to her. Mm-hmm. I didn't do a whole lot of that the first year. I mean, even still now, I need to do more, but it's better. There were just a lot of cues that I did not recognize. I didn't think I needed to do. There were things around the house I wouldn't do because I was so focused on work.
Yeah.
And I always put that first. I mean, that's most guys. They put work over being married. I think for me, it was a little extra though, because I'm really good at prioritizing. If this thing doesn't matter, I don't care about it.
Yeah.
I only care about the thing that's bigger. Like, I can triage within like a second what should be done or should not be done.
You know, women are
which
these,
is not always good.
Yeah.
In the home.
And women, God has made our wives to be these beautiful and mysterious Rubik's cubes that keep shifting as you try to solve them, so that we have to always continue to learn about them and seek them and all their, you know, subtleties. It's like, really, you got to hunt them.
Yeah.
Initially, you marry them, and then you got to keep hunting them forever.
I will say, to my wife's credit, she definitely first year, I'd even say year two, she was doing probably 70% of the work, the relationship kind of work, and I was doing like 30. Which I didn't recognize until later, and that was tough. We got a marriage counselor. Which was great. Third party, being able to talk to both of us.
I love that. That's great.
I would recommend that to anyone, because there's going to be, I wish we had done it the first year we were married, because a lot of things just kept happening or not happening. And then we started in year two. That's my advice to anyone, because I guarantee there's going to be blind spots that the guy's going to have and the girl's going to have. And there were some she had, I had the most, that were solved or were at least identified during that process, which is a thing 8 months long that we met with our counselor for, I think it was 6 months or 8 months every week. So that was super helpful. But she, Kara definitely, what's the right word? She put up with a lot from me.
I can't imagine. I'll put it that way. You are the worst.
I would agree. I don't have many friends. I'm glad she married me.
I'm your friend.
We talk like once a year. Okay, here's the problem. When I say I don't have friends, some people get upset. Here's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a buddy that I like game with. I play video games with. I talk to many times a week. We go to the bar, which I never do because I don't really drink, so we won't go to the bar. We'll go do something else instead, like once a week. I'm talking that. Yeah, I don't have that.
You should get that, man. That's super cool.
Yeah,
it's real important. Man, we're not meant to go at it alone.
Well,
we're a relationship.
I don't know.
Glorious. Paul was constantly.
I know. He had a bunch of.
Barnabas or Timothy or Titus. And
yeah,
Mark,
Paul was just single. Yeah.
He was single, but man, he had a band of brothers that were always together, strengthening each other and, you know, reaffirming love for each other and, you know, traveling together.
Part of it is, one, it's some of my autistic stuff. Okay, so get this. On this, this is fun.
Remember my account thing? I keep trying to be your friend.
I'll tell you.
And you're obnoxiously difficult of like, so hang out with me. I have to give you some money out of my wallet?
No. But what value will you provide?
I can't afford.
So this is hilarious. So I got an executive coach last year, personal one. We have coaches at work now, but I had my own coach. And he was trying to identify what I need to work on at work, like personally, not like some like, better scheduling or whatever crap. So he ran a poll with all the people I work with directly, and the consistent thing that came back was lack of empathy. I fired him right after. That's not exactly why. I wasn't getting a lot of value for the money,
it was technically a funny joke, and I left you hanging with this long pause. I want to give like, I repent of not laughing. That was actually funny, and your timing was good.
Thank you.
But I was just caught me on my heels. That was technically funny.
Good. I've been watching a lot of Norm MacDonald. It had better be. So
it was good.
Excellent. So no. So he wasn't a lot of good value. He would have been helpful early on. So I told him, hey, you need to go. It was very expensive, but I did get, my empathy sucks. So it was around the same time we had the marriage counselor that helped, but empathy has always been the thing I am most challenged with in seeing, considering other people's feelings.
Got it. Yeah.
So being friends with me is hard. And then on top of that, so I have that. And then the second thing that makes it hard is position.
Yeah.
So I've had people, they'll try to use me or use their friendship with me. And that sucks because it's just like a little
dagger. Here's one example of what friendship could be for. If like y'all were had your ears clipped a little bit. You had some counseling, which I'm a huge fan of.
Yep.
You should have premarital counseling and then get checkups regularly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. With, you know,
we'll do it again that soon.
That's awesome. Well, Kara could, anytime she wanted to, come hang out with Becca. You both could, but think of it of like,
you know, maybe
I don't need anything from you.
Maybe I don't need maybe anything I don't from need, me. Maybe I don't need to hang out with you. Maybe we'll just go hang out with her. Maybe we'll just both, you come work here.
But seriously, we'll it'd house. Be a great thing. If our, my, Becca's been putting up with me for going on 18 years now.
Jeez.
And I have a lot of mannerisms that are similar to you. And I have a lot different as well. And our position and job is very unique and extremely difficult to deal with, but it doesn't have to be all work and no play. If I was watching some clip came down my feed, and I don't scroll very often, but this was on X, and some dude was interviewing all these very, very old people, and he was asking them the same kind of questions.
What would you do different?
That kind of thing. And every single one of them was worry about job less, worry about money less, worry about, and it was all came down to I would invest in meaningful relationships. And spouse was part of that, but it was also other friendships. And it all came down to meaningful relationships. And so it's kind of like you don't know what you're missing kind of thing. But you took the biggest step in is that's the most intimate relationship humanly possible. And that's a wife who was forcing you to get better in that way, as mine has forced me to. That's really, really cool. What are some of the biggest influences in your life?
Influences?
Yeah, it's open ended. It's kind of wherever you want to take the question.
So,
but this is
so I've had two phases of my life. Three phases.
I'm deeply intrigued.
So,
this is great.
Yeah, this is my analytical mind. So first was growing up, so age 1 to 19 or 0 to 19, I guess. So that's me bebopping along, homeschooling, all that,
right.
Farm animals, milking, cows, stuff like that. Cool, all that. T Rex was when I was 20. And then everything kind of like became real and I had to be an adult. So 20 to 27 when I got married. So married life is completely different.
Yes, it is.
And including work, like everything has changed. Like the game has changed, right? So I would say influences of the third phase of my life, and then fourth will be kids. Fifth will be death.
Y'all planning on some kids?
Oh, yeah.
Like a year? What are you asking for?
Are you asking about our sex life? Is that what you're asking?
Sure. Sure. Have you pulled the goalie?
You're asking a homeschooler a lot of deep questions. Wow.
Well, you actually brought it up to back me down, and I'm like, I've been married 18 years. I give a rip. Yeah, you pulled the goalie, man. Y'all doing the thing?
Oh,
isn't it funny that you can?
My wife and I have talked about this a lot.
The fun thing about language is, I'm like, you can. It wouldn't be okay to walk up to grandma and be like, "Hey, we're having lots of."
Right, but you're like, we're trying for kids or whatever.
And
yeah,
it becomes the only social. Yeah, you can announce it. You can tell grandma. You can tell her father.
You could tweet it.
You can look at her father in the eyes and be like, yeah, we're trying to have kids. And that's like, hey, you know what? me and your daughter.
This is where communication being on the scale for instructors, kind of carries over, I guess. I don't know.
I don't think I'm a very good instructor.
No, my wife and I have talked about it a lot, like the cultural inconsistency. I don't know. Anyway, we've also talked about, because, you know, we're a little older, right? I'm going to be 31. I'm old, right? So we've talked about adoption. We've talked about some other things as well.
Good luck with adoption.
I know.
Give me a buzz. We sat in that queue for 2 years until we finally threw in the towel after our heart was broken 30 times.
I know. Well, then that's where one thing I've thought about is so the pro-life conversation is one that we have at T-Rex and we talk about.
Good.
There's a piece that I don't see a lot of Christians talk about, and that is the adoption process. They talk all about babies pro-life, And they don't necessarily talk about the secondary, which is, well, what to do with the babies people don't want who put them up for adoption, which is better than aborting them. Yeah. So like, cool, adoption. And so one thing I've wondered, and this is my wonder invention mind, is what should people be doing to revolutionize, isn't the right word, basically take back adoption culture? Yeah. Because, I mean, that's been taken, I would argue, from Christians. I mean, like, Christians can't adopt kids. It's harder now. Other gay couples can, but Christians can't. So what – and I'm not saying – I may not be the guy to do this. I'm probably not. But I've wondered, what should the Christian community be doing to take back adoption culture so these kids can go to good homes?
I don't know how much culture – this is a question. I'm not sure. But I did sit in the line for a couple of years. I think other than cases of infertility – Christians are trying to adopt and foster kids at a greater rate than any other group. And
not
so
surprised.
It's not that Christians don't care about adopting. In fact, we do.
You want
to
try.
Every time I seem to run into an adoptive family, it's Christians, and they love kids. They love babies, not just the ones in the womb, but even after they're born. Yep. And so that is something I see, though, just to speak to what you were saying, there is a bureaucratic tyranny that is happening that is excluding Christians. It's like, if we want to adopt a baby, we have to, one, make sure you have these vaccines. You are not allowed to homeschool. Like, I can't foster someone because they won't let me homeschool. You must plug them.
Is that a Georgia thing, I'm assuming?
It is at least a Georgia thing. Yeah, in Georgia. And so immediately we were ruled out of fostering. And then you adopt a baby, and the hoops you had to jump through. And we watched, a lot of times, the adoptive mother gets to choose.
Yeah.
And so that they feel... like they're woke and progressive. They're choosing, you know,
still involved in the kid's life, even though it's not theirs. Yeah.
Gay couples and whatever. And here we are on the sidelines, and we're saying yes to like crack babies, literally for years. All right, here's a homeless woman. She just had birth, gave birth. She was high on meth when she came in. Would you like this baby? Yes or no? And we're like, yes. And fire it up as fast as we can. But the demand for babies was wild high during COVID. Wild high. A lot of people don't know this, but it was. And the reason why is the fear of COVID had all these would-be mothers just kill their kids.
Oh, interesting.
So we were in the queue, and we're having a certain amount of babies come through. And then the fear of COVID happened, and all of a sudden, the normal chain that we'd gotten used to evaporated.
Mm.
It felt like it went from whatever 100% it was at, it dropped down to like 20%.
Really?
The cases just disappeared. And so the fear of COVID caused a reaction where abortion shot through the roof.
Interesting. And the bad economy doesn't help with any of that either, for sure. Like, continuing afterwards. Yeah.
It doesn't, but it's not like people stopped reproducing and then all of a sudden COVID. It's like, no. It's people got scared. And then at that same moment, cultural moment, all the cases just disappeared. And that was a bizarre thing. Again, not something that propagandistic media is going to report on.
So now I know a thing. Jeez.
There you go. It was agonizing. We had a nursery set up and an empty crib, and we were saying yes to just like everything. And man, but all the babies were killed. So, you know, fear of COVID killed our baby girl, you know, and eventually we just, our heart broke a million times. So, but... Not to dissuade, but I think more important even than the cultural element of winning that back, which you said and I agree with, and you're totally right.
Mm-hmm.
I want some politicians to get in and do some major
focus on it,
foster care reform and adoption reform. What's happening is strong men haven't stood up to be able to gain areas back, and they've been able to just—
deteriorate.
The wild hoop. I mean, we spent tens of thousands of dollars just to be able to start
to be qualified.
Yeah. And then the hoops you had to jump in were even worse. Like two different times they had to come to our house and dig up our septic tank just to see that it was there. They wanted full vaccination records for our dog. It was wild, the amount of stuff.
What about the gun stuff?
Oh yeah, you couldn't have any guns. I mean, they're walking through our house and checking for smoke detectors and certain air. And you've like, it is wild in depth of like the hoops and what they're doing is they're just bleeding out and making it extremely difficult for anyone to adopt. That's what they're doing. Whereas abortion, you can get one of those by the instantly. End of the sentence.
Easy. Yeah.
But to adopt a baby, it's going to cost, it used to be like $30,000. It's closer to 50 or 60 grand now to adopt a baby. And you got to jump through agonizing amounts of hoops. It is really awful. It looks like they're kidnapped by the bureaucracy of the state, like trafficked babies. You know, that's what it feels like. That's what it looks like. So I would love political reform in that. This is where people say, hey, John, run for office. I'm like, I am serving my country better right now.
I don't want that.
And I think I'm affecting greater amount. Than,
yep.
I have no strings. No one, you know, controls what I say. I'm beholden to no one. I can say whatever I want. And I like that. And I
it's
good influence.
Valuable.
And, and I would
agree with that. Yeah. People should run for office.
You should run for office.
No, for the same reasons you just said.
I already called not it.
No,
The caveat
is I will do it if I determine, or it is determined, but I don't know how, that'll be a greater way to serve the body of Christ, but also Americans, if I can do it that way instead of what I'm doing now.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
I don't know. I don't think it will be either.
I don't think you'd be able to because it's such an evil time that requires compromise. I wouldn't compromise. I wouldn't play ball.
Well, I have ideas for how I wouldn't doing it.
And then when I refuse the suitcase of money,
they would, it's just money.
You know, all sides would come after
now,
and
so
attack
no, this is the strategy.
You don't take the suitcase of money, they're going to destroy you and get you out of office.
Fun. That's great. One term. That's fine. You, what I would do, I've already decided this is what I would do. What's the salary of a congressman? It's like 100K or something.
Yeah, but
something.
Then you get
I would just donate it every year.
$238 million kickbacks from lobbying and insider trading.
So what I would say is I would not trade any stocks while I'm in office. I would donate my salary that I get every year after not being in office to whatever, like adoption, I don't know, something like that. Yeah. So that money I'm not going to make. Yeah. I'll make it very clear that I'm not there for the money and what I would do with all the money that would be happening while I'm there, which would piss people off, which is fine because that would be my goal in going over there, would be to piss people off and send a message because it's not about the money. It's about sending a message.
I agree. There's a place in the book of Amos where it says, in such a time, the prudent man will keep silent, for it is an evil time. And it's not that he's not compromising. It's in the context of that passage is everything is so wildly corrupt that the that they have a monopoly on it, and the righteous man cannot even enter it, so to speak.
Do you think we're there now?
I'm just saying what was happening there in the crimes.
It can happen. It's a time that can happen.
And it looks like it's that. It looks like it's that. Now, I do think that there's some politicians out there that didn't take the suitcase of money. That's how I think about it. There's
the
politicians.
It's the pill, red pill or blue pill. Yeah.
And there's a few, you can't use the word red pill anymore. It's a whole different thing
black
now.
Black pill. No.
I know. I'm tired of colored pills.
Green, yellow.
Everything changes. But now I sort politicians, not in Republican or Democrat or anything like that. It's just two buckets. And one of the buckets is nearly empty. It's took the suitcase of money and didn't take the suitcase of money. And you have all the folks and then just a few.
Guess which suitcase is more fun?
No money.
It's so much more fun.
I agree. I would rather have my convictions. I would rather be on a holy campaign. I would rather have the audience of one in a heaven applauding me than all the
if it's just me though, I think that kind of thing's fun, and maybe I'm just a bit of a psychopath, which generally company founders are.
I think you're psychopaths. More sociopathic.
Sociopath. Thank you. I got it wrong, but so it could be some of that. It would be fun to do things different.
Yeah.
If I was a politician, but I don't want to do it.
I would vote for you.
So thank you. I would vote for you, but I think you're having
a better impact with what your platform is right now.
I would agree.
And I think that's awesome. And I am thrilled to have had you here today.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to have been here too.
Where can folks find you? And do you want to say anything, tease something coming out? Something excited that you're working on?
Ooh.
Anything like that. But
well, the best place to find out more about me is Reddit.
No, Reddit is the worst.
Hey, there's juicy made up stories if you want to read some wild stuff.
It's where all the hateful folks come to.
Well, it's anonymous. That's why.
There's some really awful John Lovell. I read some of it.
You know, I don't go to Reddit. I just don't. I made a rule like 3 years ago. I don't go to Reddit unless it's for something IT or video game related. But we'll get to that. I just don't go to Reddit. It's not worth it. Not worth my poor brain. And now people talk about my wife. So, and that sucks. And it's lame. But so Instagram, I've got my Instagram, although it's dying. Instagram's pretty much dead. YouTube's good. T-Rex Arms, YouTube. Lucas Trex Arms, Instagram. I have a Twitter where I'm very unhinged. My tweet today was, so did he do it? That was my tweet today. Not very unhinged, but I was just, you know, interested to see. You know, did OJ died.
Oh,
so I tweeted. So
apropos.
Anyway, okay. Yeah, so it's probably like, you know, so I have a little bit of fun on Twitter. And then the website, trx-arms.com.
Cool.
And yeah, and then we have some other things going on, but yeah, most exciting things. I don't know.
That's a good response.
I won't talk about them. Yeah, they're secret.
Guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Again, Lucas Bakken, T-Rex Arms. We will see you next time.